How's it going, Andrew?
What up, Matt?
Not much, not much. How was your Easter?
It was good. Got to, went back to the old Rent's house and helped him make breakfast. I cooked a frittata.
Ooh, nice.
It turned out really, really good. I gotta be said, though, like, my family's so white that when they were making their eggs, they just wanted to put salt and pepper, and I said, that's going to be bad. So I went to their spice cabinet and started digging around and just dragging out like 10 different spices. I'm like, I want some paprika. I want some garlic salt. I want some herbs. I want some whatever. And I started just dumping all this stuff and like lorries and putting all this stuff in there. And then they're like, whoa, what's going on? What's going on? Like, that's too much. That's too much. And I was like, no, you have to season. Come on, guys. You got to learn there's more to life than salt and pepper.
I feel personally attacked right now because I... particularly on eggs, I'm a salt and pepper person.
And you've never lived. So I started doctoring that thing up, which is what my dad taught me. I was cooking with my mom. We kicked my dad out of the kitchen because he gets a little too overbearing in the kitchen, where he just wants to take over. And we're like, no, you have to stay outside. So we made him stay outside with the dogs, where he belongs. So we kicked him out.
Wow.
And so we kicked him out, so he didn't have to do any work. And he was also watching the baby. So doctored up thin sliced potatoes, laid down. I crisped them, or like I browned them, laid them in. It's delicious. We made some fantans, which is like a pastry my mom's always made since she's a kid, and she taught my wife how to make them. So a little tradition being passed down. Dyed some eggs, had some fun. But yeah, it was a good time.
Right on.
Got back. You know, we're actually recording right now on Easter Sunday. So I got back like 2 hours ago.
Yeah. Well, it's not like you were that far to go. I mean, I just got back from Maguanago, you know, shortly before we started recording as well. So, you know, I can't wait for you right now. You're in a sweet spot. That little kiddo of yours is small enough that holidays still go somewhat easy. They're not as bad. Just wait till he's like around two and a half. Holidays become one and a half to two and a half range. Holidays are a lot harder to manage.
What happens?
They're crazy. They're toddlers. They get into everything. They're all over the place.
But I like destruction.
They require constant attention. Right now, that little guy probably spent half the day sleeping.
Half the day was spent on my dad's stomach, just to pass out while he was also passed out asleep. So
enjoy this time, for you know not what comes in the future.
It's fine. I like chaos. I thrive in chaos.
Sure you do. I thought I did too.
You know, that's kind of true, because what I keep finding out is, like, I was like, yeah, dude, I've dealt with annoying stuff. When people would tell me, like, you know, that baby the first couple of months is going to really be hard. I'm like, I'm good on no sleep, dude. You guys don't know what you're talking about. And then swiftly, I'm like, oh my God.
And then you discovered what no sleep actually is.
Yeah, and now that I'm officially on parental leave and taking over the full sleep or the night shift, I'm going to really find out. I might get a little wonky on these next couple of episodes.
Yeah, it'll be fine. You're always a little wonky. You can't get much more wonky.
How dare you?
How dare I speak the truth?
They were not prepared to hear it.
We're like 29 episodes in at this point. Everybody knows you're wonky.
I would like to think they think I'm a nice gentleman.
Well, I didn't say you weren't a nice gentleman.
Oh, I'm just a wonky gentleman?
Yeah, you're a nice wonky gentleman.
Oh, good. I'll take that. You know what? I'm fine with that.
You can be both at the same time.
That's true. They're not mutually exclusive.
Right.
Cool. Well, as you guys can tell, we've had a lot of I wouldn't say they're serious episodes, but we've been going through serious topics.
Yes.
Which is awesome. But we decided through two means that, one, you guys might need to break to let your brains absorb those virtues. And maybe you missed just hearing me and Matt talk. On the other end, we just forgot to prepare anything. So we're just going
to... We didn't forget. We chose not to prepare anything.
Yeah, smart. I like the return. So we kind of, at the last minute, we're like, you know, we haven't had, like, some of our original episodes were just us talking and kind of mildly following a topic. So we kind of thought it'd be cool, now that we're 3 months into Matt's year as master, 3 months into mine as junior warden, even though Matt's about to be like, but you missed some stuff. And we just figured we would talk about what we've learned so far in this year's journey in masonry, and just, you know, be two brothers at fellowship. So let's do it.
Loosen up your ties and roll up your sleeves. It's time for Fellowship with Matt and Andrew. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Grand Lodge of Wisconsin or any other Grand Lodge or any appended body.
You know, I really feel like you made me feel a little harsher than I would have been. You know, you may have missed a couple of things, but you also had a baby. You also had to officiate a wedding.
I also did 2 pancake breakfasts. I've done 2 stated communications out of 4. I've missed 2 stated. That's it. Which I don't like missing either. I've been saying, okay, I was telling someone, I was talking to our newest entered apprentice the other day, and he was like, so it seems like there can be a lot you can be committed to as a Mason. And I said, too much. There can be way too much. And I said, all I ask from you is to commit to making it to your Mother Lodge's stated communication once a month. If you can't make it to soup nights, you can't make it to any other stuff, fine. But make sure you make it to stated, because when I miss stated, I feel like I'm out of the loop.
Yep. No, it's very easy to feel out of the loop. And I've missed 1 or 2 over the course of the last 5 years.
I think I've missed the most this year. That I don't remember really missing another stated.
I don't know if you have or not. I can't really recall. I feel like there might be one in there. And I mean, people get sick, stuff happens, double bookings happen, you know, but I will forever hold over your head that you chose going to a bachelor party in Chicago over coming to stated.
It's my best friend. Okay, stated happens every month. This bachelor party happens one time. So,
well, I mean, maybe 50% of marriages end in divorce, so there's a good chance you might have another bachelor party at some point.
Don't jinx it. But I mean, also, I knew, so like when I missed the last one, I was up till 2 in the morning cooking to make sure that, because like we've talked about, I gave my stewards 2 meals that they were going to have to plan, shop for, and run. So when I had to have them cover, I was like, it's not really fair that I'd have them shop and do all that stuff. I just wanted them to do food service. And I knew, well, first off, they would have killed it if they did go do all the shopping and all that stuff anyways. Oh, yeah, for sure. I didn't feel like that was what I'd set up as what their expectations were. So I was like, I'm going to do all this. And I also knew we were in good hands because those 2 boys, they really know what they're doing out there. So.
Right. No, I agree. And I mean, I know it sounds like I give Andrew a lot of grief. I understand why stuff got missed, and I don't really care that much because he does an excellent job and he put in his work beforehand and everything else. But everybody needs to understand that my job before, while, and after I'm in the East is to give everybody a lot of grief because I just like to talk smack sometimes.
You know, I would argue that that's a good system of a close lodge. The amount of ball busting that happens around this place is ridiculous.
Well,
but it comes from a place of love.
Right. Well, you tend to put men in a group together and sometimes, yeah, you get, you know, anybody who played a high school sport or even a college sport, you know, that locker room was a lot of times it was a lot of ball busting and, you know, it's good and everybody laughs about it as long as it comes from the right place, right? And that's the key, is that it comes from the right place.
And, you know, I've always said that if I'm not giving you crap, then you probably should be worried that I don't like you. So, like, it's kind of paradoxical where you're like, God, this guy's giving me crap. It's like, yes, because he likes you. He thinks you're fun. He's hoping that you dish it back and join the game.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Because we all like to talk a little smack. That's kind of what we do.
Part of the game. Boys being boys. Boys being dudes. Dudes being brothers.
Yep. Yep. Especially when you're brothers. You're gonna talk a little smack to each other.
Gotta do it.
It's part of the game.
So wait, all right. Now, last episode, you had to drag me down out of a rabbit hole. So let me drag you out. What were we going to talk about? I remember.
Wow. All right. Yeah. You can really tell that we haven't scripted anything for this one.
So we were going to just do a little bit of a high-end review of what our year's been like and what we have learned so far within our officers' positions. And so you're currently sitting as Master of the Lodge. You've already had a pretty eventful start of the year.
Yeah, it's been really big.
My question for you is, what have you found the most challenging so far in these first 3 months being Master of the Lodge?
Ooh, that's a really tough question because I have managed to find myself in an extraordinarily unique position. And I said this coming into my year, and I've said it since I have been sitting in the East, is I was handed over a ship that was already sailing in the right direction. And all I needed to do was make sure it didn't veer off course. we have a very, very, very strong line of guys behind me that don't require me to stay, that I can trust to get their work done without having to micromanage them. And, you know, for those reasons, it hasn't really been a challenge. Now, mind you, I also come from a background of having been in leadership positions prior to this.
First, similar, what, the Hog Chapter, right?
Well, so yeah, I mean,
it's a volunteer organization.
So nothing's ever going to be the same as like running a lodge, right? That's a very unique experience. And I wouldn't even call it running a lodge. It's more so like guiding and directing a lodge than anything else.
Coaching a lodge.
Yeah, kind of. You know, but for me, it started way back in high school. In leadership positions, I was president of the science club for a couple of years.
What did the science club do? Sorry, I'm going to stop you. I didn't know you were president of the science club.
Oh, yeah. That's something. So I was one of those guys that was on the football team and president of the science club at like the same time. So I lived in both worlds a little bit.
I don't want you to take this the wrong way. You don't look like the president of the science club.
No. That's fine. I'll take that as a compliment. But no, we were involved in like some trivia competitions and stuff like that and stuff. So it was kind of like one of those things where I was overseeing how, you know, practices and stuff like that and how we get there, you know, get to the competitions and all that kind of stuff, obviously under the guidance of one of the teachers at the school because we were in high school. So, but, you know, being in leadership roles kind of started there for me, honestly.
I think that we could call this, probably for many of our listeners who know Matt, a Time for Fellowship exclusive, where this is a bit of Matt lore that I never even thought existed, and I'm sure a lot of them didn't, but I'm happy that I learned it.
Yeah, that one will probably catch a lot of people off guard. But actually, believe it or not, way back in the day before I discovered how much I actually enjoyed working with my hands, I originally in high school was thinking about going to college to be a marine biologist. So,
Rad.
Yeah, I was big into the science stuff, and then I totally switched courses.
You know, I would argue, and honestly, I'm not going to stop our rabbit holes because this episode is basically one big rabbit hole to begin with. Being a person who had a strong interest in the sciences, but then going into like trades or sort of working with your hands type of work actually builds a really well-balanced person because they have their feet in both worlds. Yeah. And like, so for me, I've always been on the opposite end, but my whole family has always been farmers and tradesmen. So I had in high school and stuff, I would work in assembly factories, right, doing assembly work and stuff. So I got a bit of that experience, which can help me have conversations on both sides of the fence, which I've always thought was kind of a cool perspective that I was able to get, even though I kind of got forced into working those jobs.
Right.
And they were horrible.
I mean, you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff, you know, I have a similar background. I worked in a lot of, you know, I did fast food. I worked at Stein's Gardens and Gifts when I was in high school, did all that kind of stuff. Summer jobs. I've done home improvement jobs. I worked in a cable tie factory in college. You know, I've done a lot of blue collar stuff. I wanted to be a police officer there for a while. Unfortunately, that didn't pan out. You know, I went to college. I double majored in criminal justice and psychology, which is pretty far away from marine biology, which is what I thought I was going to try to go into, you know. So, yeah, I understand that feeling of being able kind of, you know, walk in both worlds a little bit. You know, honestly, if I could go back and do it again, I probably would have went to trade school to be like a motorcycle mechanic. That's something I really enjoy doing. And at this point in my life now, I enjoy doing it as a hobby. You can't always take your hobby and turn them into a career. I tried that for a minute when I worked at House of Harley, and it did not really go well. I kind of got tired of riding motorcycles, honestly. So, you know, it's not always best to turn your hobbies into your career, because your hobbies are your hobbies for a reason.
All right, here's a hard question. What do you think my job history is? Weird job.
Your weird job. Well, I know you ran a kitchen, so that's not it.
Bartender, supervisor, kitchen manager. Yeah, I did that.
Yeah, yep. That one doesn't surprise me. I don't know what your weird one would be.
I did. So I started at Target.
I worked at Target for a little bit, too.
This is Target. They wanted me to go into management, and I said, nah, I'm going to college. I don't want to live here.
That's what I said to Steins, too. They wanted me to be a supervisor, and I was like, no, I'm going away to college.
Yeah, I don't want to live here. Then I worked as an assembly line person. Not assembly line. I was in assembly at a factory that made giant grinders for grinding up stones.
Ooh, fun.
And so as like a college kid in a summer job, I got a lot of responsibilities, such as using like indoor cranes and stuff, nice, which with many tons, big stuff, swinging it around a factory, putting them into place, wrenching it all in, doing stuff like that. And I worked at the gas house doing kitchen stuff. Then I was a gardener for a while doing landscaping. Yeah, that's it. And then now I do my weird office stuff.
So you want to know something really fun about when I worked that cable tie job at a cable tie manufacturer? Some of the orders I ran, presses I would be running, because I was just, I would quality control inspect stuff as it came off the press and stuff like that, and make sure the packaging was right. There's the right amount of water in the bag for the cable ties to cure properly and stuff like that. Because it was all plastic injection molding. But I ran orders for NASA and John Deere.
Wow.
There's a bunch of really cool order things coming through there. So like cable ties that are on like rockets, you know. So it was kind of a big deal. But
president of the science club makes cables right. for rockets.
Cable ties, like the little zip ties. Yeah. That's what we made. Yeah. But to get back to our point, so I found myself in leadership pretty early on in high school with that stuff. And then in college, after a few years, I found myself supervisor of, here's another odd job I did. I worked for the parking office. So we wrote parking tickets on campus.
You were a meter maid at UW-Milwaukee?
No, at UW-Eau Claire.
Thank God.
Sure. Yeah. But we wrote parking tickets. So I was supervisor there after a couple of years for a little bit. And then when I came out of college, I found myself pretty quickly doing the security job that I did at a local hospital. Found myself quickly, I ended up being as a security officer 3, which was basically like the lead person. And basically I was quote unquote in charge in the absence of our shift supervisors or the director. So that came with some responsibilities. I was also a professional communication skills and principles of subject control and impact weapon instructor. So there's a lot of stuff that went into that. And then, yeah, I found myself at the Hog chapter during that time and, you know, kind of moved up into, I started out as editor of our newsletter and then found myself as assistant director for 4 years. And then I was director for a year and a half before things kind of went sour between myself and the dealership. And ultimately with Hog chapters, the dealership has ultimate control over it.
Mm.
You know, they wanted to change us from elections to appointments, and they decided that I was the director to do that with, which made for a not healthy relationship between the chapter and I. So that lasted like a year and a half before the dealership, for one reason or another that I won't get into, but reasons I disagree with, removed me as director. I was kind of felt like a sacrificial lamb when that ended, but that ended at the perfect time because I was about to do my fellow craft posting and then found myself fully engaged in masonry. So
that's how we got mad.
But you know, leadership, being in a leadership role is something that has kind of, I've just naturally gravitated to. And I will say though, that at least through the first quarter of this year, being worshipful master of Lake Lodge has been the most enjoyable leadership role I found myself in. And I feel like that's because we have very positive things going on right now. I didn't see any reason to make like massive changes like I was kind of trying to do with the Hog chapter, which was part of the problem because I kept telling them you need to evolve or die. And I think we have a lodge that understands kind of that culture of we need to keep moving forward and we're doing the right things. So let's keep the ship sailing in the right direction. I mean, obviously what we're doing is working. In the first quarter of this year already, we've brought in 3 new brothers. We have one more for sure on the way and probably another one after that. And that's just right now. We're not even halfway through the year yet. So what this lodge has built over the last few years that I'm just trying to keep moving in the right direction is, as you know, working. And you know, I see no reason to just, I have the easiest, hardest job on the face of the planet. And I know I've said that a few times, like, but like, honestly, you guys, the people that came before me and the people that are coming after me have this whole thing set up for success. And it's just, yeah, it's made it a purely enjoyable experience.
Well, and it's cool in the way that a lot of our past masters and a lot of the ones who were instrumental to building what we're kind of living now are still past masters who are in our lodge. They're still sitting on the sidelines. They're still in officers' positions. They're the same people who kind of, from my understanding of Lake lore, really started pushing us in this direction. Yep. They're also still active members of our lodge. And I think that brings up a really good point in the importance of past masters and how they have not only just said, I'm going to steer the ship. Good luck, everyone else. I'm going to go do something else now. They're like, and they are very active in other things also. And they're like, I'm going to do some other things, but they're still here enjoying the fruits of their labors and still being willing to be a wise and helpful counselor. But one thing that's, I think, really cool about our past masters, in Pacific, I was talking with our newest entered apprentice. He's like, yeah, you always hear these jokes online about like the grumpy past master who's like always obstinate or always kind of holding things back. We've never had that problem with our past masters. Nope. And I think that's contributes to our success is our past masters are willing to challenge, but not obstruct.
Right.
They'll say, hey, I'm going to make you talk it through more. Or they might be like, how do you want to do this? But if you have an idea and you can present it well enough, they might challenge and be like, have you thought about this or that? But if you want to go, they'll be like, all right, do it. And that was one thing that I've noticed that's very unique in our culture is we're pretty open to younger members' ideas as long as they do the work and flesh it out and make sure that it is quality. And they're willing to say, yeah, we can try it. Go for it.
Right. No, and I agree. I definitely agree on that point. But going back to what you were saying, pretty much every past master, with the exception of one since 2013, is still an active member of this lodge. And some of them from before that even are still around. You know, I can't say as chronologically prior to that that they're all still here. But from 13 forward, every past master, with the exception of one, is still a very active and very valued member of this lodge. And that's extraordinarily helpful. I felt like I had a wealth of knowledge backing me up. But at the same time, if I said, hey, I think I want to do X, Y, or Z, even if they had done it before and it hadn't worked for them, they would go, yeah, we tried it before, but it can't hurt to try it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we definitely have a very encouraging core of past masters that want nothing but to see you succeed, which is very helpful.
And like, you know, it can be a challenge with past masters in the way that egos are always a part where like they are remembering all the work they've done. And I understand they're scared. They're like, I don't want this. I worked so hard. I want to go downhill. But I think ours have done a really good job of being like, a lot of these things are just not going to really make a difference because I think the core idea that has been passed down, which is, I would say, for lack of better words, work hard, play hard attitude, mm-hmm. where we really like to say, as long as our degrees are excellent, that we are active in doing events, we are going to go to the bars after lodge, have a couple of pints and have some fellowship and really enjoy each other's company, has created this nice ecosystem of like, you're going to come here and you're going to work hard and then we're going to laugh about it and be friends. And it builds this really cool closeness that's kind of bonded in the challenge of hard work. I mean, every year, every degree, every event is challenging.
Right.
And it's challenging on all of the members who are in the officer's line working that event and trying to make it succeed. It requires scheduling. It requires a lot of different skills. And it's hard. And then you get to go, we're going to work hard and we're going to really try to make this excellent. And then we're going to go down the street to the pub. We're going to grab a beer and laugh and going, oh my God, did you remember this? How can we improve here? And that's where we do a lot of that self-reflecting, but also that's where we bond a lot of our friendships, which is why a lot of us are so close.
Right. Well, and I was going to piggyback on that point. I don't think they're as mutually as exclusive as it seems. I think the fact that we have a work hard, play hard attitude helps build it all around because the play hard part of it brings us all closer together just as much as the work hard does. And the closer knit you are as a line and a core and a lodge, just the whole lodge in general, because it's not just the officers that go out, the more you're going to want to work together and do together. So if you remove that fellowship time and all you're doing is coming to lodge and working together, you're not going to develop that same core. So that fellowship time afterwards almost makes it easier to work harder together. They both build on one another and they build that closeness and that reason that you want to keep doing what you're doing and the fact that you don't want to let the other person down because you are that close with them.
Yeah, and that you like, and dare I say that while we're at lodge during labors, we are crafting beautiful stones. And then when we are at fellowship afterwards, outside of the lodge building, doing fellowship time at a bar, we're building the cement that we can then reapply to those blocks that we had just built to create a very strong edifice.
There you go. I like it. I like it.
I like to use Masonic sentences.
Yeah, you're better at doing that than me. I just like giving it straight the way it is.
But I mean, it is important because, you know, and that's not to say that, oh, my lodge has to go to a bar. We're not friends. No, it means you need to find that could be a lot of
dinner
lodges,
beforehand.
Dinner is great beforehand, but honestly, I would argue, and I think that most worshipful, Dave Ritchie was talking about get out of the lodge room and how important that is. And
go out to breakfast, go out to dinner, go do something, go to a baseball game, do something.
And I think we're using the example that just our lodge does is we go down the block to a pub afterwards. So we're outside a lodge. No, it's no longer under any of the normal restrictions. We're just hanging out.
Yep.
And Most Worshipful is talking about that at annual. He's like, you need to go to breakfast. Go get an early bird breakfast with some people. Go do this stuff because I have found that even if you're having dinner at lodge and fellowship, that's great talking time, but it's still, there's an air of, I don't want to use decorum, but kind of, but there's a professionalism there that people are afraid to just talk their ideas and just be authentic.
Go bowling.
Go bowling. And so like when, even if you're like, hey, we don't really have a drinking culture, go do anything.
Right.
Because you'll find that in those very casual moments, that's where a lot of the ideas come from, where people are like, you know, now that we're having eggs and scramblers, I've been thinking.
Yep.
And I've found that so many of the ideas that come out when you are away from the lodge building, just brothers out in the world, having fun. So many of those ideas are what fuel the next day to communication where it comes in like, hey, we worked through something, like we're going to try to do this.
Yep.
And it bonds people closer, but it also really, I think, helps the think tank and it keeps us at the cutting edge when you do get out of the lodge building a couple of times a month, sorry, not a month, couple of times a year to just go and be brothers in the real world.
Right. Well, at least a couple of times a year, right? I mean, you have to think about it in the sense of if you only ever get together to do work or to have a business meeting, you're not going to be able to develop those bonds, okay? If you and I would only have 15 minutes before a meeting and 15 minutes after a meeting of standing around and talking, we probably wouldn't be here doing a podcast right now.
Yeah, probably not.
But we hung out way more than that, you know, because of the fellowship and everything else. So if you can establish whatever that event might be, even if it's after you guys get done with your meeting, you go sit, if you have a fellowship area, you bust out board games and, you know, just hang out, you know, and you're all drinking sodas and water or whatever you want to do, do something that allows you all to hang out more together and get to know each other better and get closer together.
And I think the key is it needs to be in a casual space. So like we do dinner beforehand. And I think doing dinner at lodge is a time honored and very important tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And I will take nothing away from it. But I would argue that's closer to having lunch with coworkers in the middle of a work shift where like it's important. It's good, like, because you can bond with a lot of larger group of people. You can do stuff like that. But it's not quite the same as stepping out of the lodge building doing something more casual. I always considered the cooking part as a traditional thing that lodges have done since time immemorial, has made food to feed its members. And I think that's important. But there has to all, and that should never go away. And I think if you're not doing it, that's something that is a huge thing that's helpful. But the ability to step out into a non-lodge space and say, now we're just friends.
I get you, but not everybody has that option.
Sure.
So there are other ways to handle that, right?
Yep.
Like busting out board games in fellowship hall or something just to get people to hang out for a while, because maybe you don't have the option of going out afterwards, or maybe that's not what your lodge wants to do, regardless, you know. But yeah, sure, you can do a baseball game or a bowling or whatever a few times a year, right? But that's not something you can do every month. There's a way to implement something that you could do every month that would bring that same kind of fellowship in. And maybe not at first. Maybe people would have trouble adapting to the, we're now out of lodge and we're switching to casual mode to do this. But I feel like after a while it would take, you know.
I do think the key too is the after lodge nature. So we do our meal before lodge,
right?
Which makes it feel like it's a lunch. It's like you're prepping for work and you're getting some nourishment. Lovely. But there are some lodges that do their meal afterwards. And I would actually argue that that's a different experience.
Probably.
Because the work's been done. You've set everything aside. And now you can talk about the meeting. And then I think that actually creates a more social atmosphere.
Yep.
But like you're saying, if you're bringing out board games or doing just something, and some people will go and have like a patio or it's a lodge, sit and have cigars, and they'll just, you know, they'll just hang
play
out.
Play cribbage, play cards, dude, and whatever.
Yeah, you could do euchre night after a lodge. We play a couple rounds of euchres and just chit-chat. I think finding a way to loosen the tie and just be friends
or even
huge.
Even do it on a different different night. I don't know if you've seen what Union Grove started doing down at their building, but they're doing like cribbage every Wednesday night now. They meet on Saturday mornings, you know, so that's a way for their members to get there on like a Wednesday night, play some cribbage, do whatever, have a good time, you know, and it's not, it's doing that same thing, right? You know, and that can be a weekly thing. And sure, maybe not everybody's there every week, but, or maybe you get more visitors, which is always good too. So,
well, and that's the thing is the key is to not make it an exclusive space, but a space that's open to every member in the lodge.
Right.
And if they come or they don't come, you'll find you'll have, in any of these situations, the regulars, they'll probably be at everyone. Yep. You'll have the cameo character who's like maybe one out of three they'll be at. Then you'll have the once a year, like, whoa, he's here. But the key is if you build it, they will come. And if you build that space, you'll find that brothers who are looking for that and who find fulfillment in that will find their way to make it to those types of things. Like, for example, when we go out after our meetings, most of the time at the end of the meeting, when you've closed, you said, hey, if anyone's interested, from guests to anyone who's in the physical building, we're going to be going out and just having a couple of drinks and hanging out. You know, if you don't drink, grab a soda. Like, we're just going to hang out.
Right.
Come join us.
Right. Well, and I've made a point of making that announcement at the end because I felt like sometimes people felt, nobody voiced it, but I just got this feeling like there's a bunch of us that understood that's what we were going to do. And I felt like some people felt like they weren't invited.
I actually feel like I felt that way too, where like I would go up to a certain member and be like, you're going to be meeting us out? And they look surprised that they were asked.
Right.
And you're like, this was never supposed to be exclusive. And I think it's a good idea to let them know it's not.
I would always ask people after we close too, right? Like, hey, am I going to see you out tonight? You know, and I would get the same kind of reaction out of certain people where they were kind of like shocked. So that's why I started bringing it up right before I dismiss us, is that, hey, this is what we're doing afterwards if anyone is interested. That's why I did it at Axe Throwing. Hey, there's a bunch of us going here afterwards if anybody wants to join us, because everybody's invited.
Yep, because those type of events aren't for your close clique of friends. They're for the entire lodge, right, so that they can make friends and join, you know, in fellowship. And that should never, in a lodge, be a closed situation.
Right. Well, and it's for our visitors too. And our visitors are definitely people that don't necessarily understand that that's what we're doing unless they've visited us before. So make the announcement, let people know what's going on so that if they want to join, they can.
And we've had visitors out of state who've joined us out afterwards and hung out. And we've had really fun conversations about, you know, what are you doing at your lodges? What does it look like in this state? How do you guys do things? Like, we've had some really like edifying and really deep conversations with these members who were probably out here on, you know, a lot of them are out for business or something. Like, they're on a business trip.
Yep.
And they're like, well, I guess, you know, I'm out here. I'll go to this lodge meeting. And then they're like, oh, that was fun. And they're like, well, why don't you come make friends? And then they were like, oh, this night just got way better. Like, we're going to go out and just have some buddies and talk. And then you end up, people add each other in social media. So now I have like three people from out of state that I see what they're up to, because you went beyond that superficial, that did that just, hello, brother, welcome to our lodge. And then you were like, so what is on with your life? How are you doing? Like, what brings you here? And so you actually form really good personal connections too.
Right. Well, and I think there's not a lot that we're similar. That's similar between hog and masonry. However, one thing I can say that is similar is that we always set it in hog and we say it in masonry. A lot of times the best work happens outside of the meeting.
Yeah, I agree.
That's where you have high level conversations and where you start thinking about different sorts of things.
Well, it's funny. So as a podcast called Time for Fellowship, we somehow drag a conversation about Matt's challenges back to fellowship. We're like, we just talking about how good fellowship
so
is.
That goes back to the fact that, like I said, I would love to say that I found anything extraordinarily challenging. But like, even with this last degree, guy that was supposed to do the historical got mandated for work, and he called me up and told me he found his own replacement already. The guy that was supposed to do the picture lecture had some family stuff come up. I called the other guy we have that does the picture lecture, and boom, like, you know, like 6 hours before we were going to have the degree, and the backup second guy agreed to do it. Like, so like, even when it's come to like scheduling degrees, it hasn't been challenging, and we've been able to put like enough practices on the calendar that even if you can't make one of them, you're at the other one. And, you know, everybody's been able to practice and get ready and everything else. So, you know, and if, you know, I've seen people improving. There's been some serious improvement. We got guys that are hungry and want to learn stuff and have filled other roles and stuff. I wish I could say something has really, really challenged me, but I haven't come across that thing yet. Our events have gone off fairly smoothly. But again, that's because of the team that we've developed. This is not me. This is all of you guys and the team that has been developed, and the fact that you guys want to work and you want to get your jobs done and you want to do them well. I don't have to do much because you guys want to do it for yourselves and you want to make this entire lodge proud.
And there, I mean, that's one of the things is once a culture of quote unquote excellence is set down before you as a young officer, where they're like, we don't accept less than really, really, really good work. You find yourself, I remember when I was a steward, being like, I need to make sure my stuff is crisp.
Yep.
Because I don't want them to be like, this is the only guy who's not willing to try to understand that this is what we do. And what ends up happening is when you build those friendships, like you said, you're like, I just don't want to let my friends down. We got to make sure this looks crisp, and we got to make sure this goes smoothly. And it is like when they say charity passes into eternity, and like good impressions and good things like that can pass down. It is like that, where there's this like essence of men before us who are like, not here. We don't do that here. We work hard.
Yep.
And then you're like, I don't want to be the one who breaks this trend.
Right.
And you know, there have been officers who have stepped out of line, I think partially because the pressure of that, where they're like, dude, I can't do it. I know what you guys need. And sometimes based on life circumstances, work and stuff like that, they're like, I cannot deliver on what you guys need. And I respect them for saying, I really want to do this, but right now I can't. And then we've been able to fill those spots with either a past master or another brother and saying, well, now we can continuously push forward. And, you know, it is hard for someone to step out, but it's good on them to say, I know what we expect here. And based on a lot of things, some of the times, most of them out of their control, a lot of the time, they're like, I can't. And yeah. So then we, you know, we make adjustments and we move forward.
Right, right. And I'm not trying to say that it's not time consuming to do this. And I'm not, I don't want to make it sound like it's like, oh, you can just, but you know, in part, I think besides having this amazing team, part of the reason it's been such an easy year is I really did have a solid plan in my head and written down a couple of places coming into this year that I spent a lot of time preparing. And I knew what my plan was. And I knew if I came in and executed, you know, on the guidelines and things that I had laid out for the year, that I enrolled with rolled with whatever may come up, that I would just be able to, you know, as long as I stayed the course and I followed the path that I had laid out, you know, with small deviations when needed, that it would go well. You know, when you have a plan, executing the plan when you have a strong team becomes really easy.
Well, and what you've done too that I've noticed is not only you were, as your friend, I noticed you were planning more than 8 to 9 months in advance. Like pretty quickly during your senior warden year, you were starting to ask, I would see you grabbing past masters and the current master and be like, hey, you know, I want to talk about calendars. Hey, I want to talk about this. So you were already starting to ask people the questions like, how do you plan this? What do we have to put in here? How do you usually put this together? Fairly early on to make sure that you had, you know, that stuff laid down and you had your calendar done.
Yeah, pretty quick. Yeah, I only want to say my calendar was done in like August.
Yeah, so it was done. And, you know, we've had a lot of Grand Lodge leadership talking about the importance of getting your calendar done early and planning early. And I think that that's proof of concept for sure, that it is essential and helpful. It makes your life not suck. But then the other thing you've done on top of having a plan is communicating the plan effectively and often, because we forget that this is a volunteer organization. So no one's checking their Outlook calendar like they're at the office. They're right. Relying on leadership to tell them, don't forget. And obviously, like, yeah, you're like, they should remember. And you're like, they should, but you can never over communicate.
Right.
And I think when you communicate effectively, it sets your team up for success, because they just can't forget.
I'm gonna stop you right there and slightly disagree with you. You can over communicate. The key is to communicate effectively when you do communicate. Because if I was to send you guys an email every day reminding you what we had going on, you guys would get pretty sick of it pretty quick.
But I will say you can't over communicate, because over communication is annoying. Under communication is a train wreck.
So yeah.
Like, well, over communicating, yes, you can. But if you're going to do one of the two,
I think the thing is to find the happy medium and communicate effectively. And I think Emailing the entire lodge once a week, like I have been every Monday, and consistency, consistency in communication helps too, because now if somebody gets used to seeing that email in their inbox from me every Monday, and one Monday it's not in their inbox, but the first thing they go do is look in that junk mail folder and see if it got filtered to the wrong spot.
Yeah. And I mean, we've talked about consistency in a lot of things. Like, I was trying to bring the columns into our, and you've always been a consistency man, the columns that you set for Labor Refreshment or a lodge. Mm-hmm. For those listening who don't know, Lafayette Lodge, a very old and distinguished lodge, ended up merging with Lake. And we went and saw their last meeting. It was actually way sadder than I thought I was expecting. And when they joined into Lake, I was determined to keep one of their traditions with us so that it wasn't like, you are now a part of Lake. It's like, no, we are now Lake together. So I wanted to add columns, their columns specifically, to our meetings. And Matt agreed. Some of my officers were like, this is annoying. And but regardless, I remember one meeting for a degree, I was going to put them and say, oh, we don't need these. And then Matt, you're me like, no, Andrew, consistency. If you're going to do it, it has to be consistent. And I was like, so that becomes second nature. And I was like, that's right. And I think that applies to a lot of things you want to accomplish in masonry, is being consistent is what really builds a strong foundation.
So there's a deeper reason behind me telling you that you needed to be consistent with those. It's a little thing, but it's something you wanted to accomplish, right? And you... granted, you're junior warden, so you're at like the lowest of the three levels of like the wardens of the lodge that are, you know, actually in charge of guiding the lodge and everything else, right? You're in that first elected position. You need to establish your consistency now. And you want people to see that consistency, because if you want to implement something and you want to go with it, as long as it doesn't go wrong, if it goes terribly, terribly wrong,
nah, please, dude, consistency, please, we're going to keep doing it.
Please do not be consistent about continuing to do it, right? But if it's something like that, that you want to see happen and you think it's a good thing, and nobody's really, I mean, you know, it is what it is. It's a symbolic gesture, and it looks kind of cool and everything
else.
It's
traditional.
Right. It's traditional. You know, be consistent with your decision to do it, because it'll lay that foundation and that expectation of that people will have of you to be consistent in future things that you do and that you say you're going to do.
It's called Masonic mentorship.
And that will also, if people expect that consistency out of you, that holds you accountable to be consistent for them.
So consistency is my accountability buddy?
Yes. That you could put it that way. There is, not that I think everything I do through, but a lot of times there are reasons I do things that, you know, may have meaning behind them.
Sure. I like it. Well, all right. So we went over, all right, second, harder question. So you don't have anything that went, that you can say went, was super challenging. So what do you think has gone very positively since you've become Worshipful Master this 3 months?
Ooh, this 3 months. Can I reach back into December a little bit?
I'll allow it.
Okay, because technically I kind of took over a little bit early before the pancake breakfast, or before Breakfast with Santa. I would say Breakfast with Santa was one of the most well-executed, well-run events we have ever put on. The kitchen ran like a well-oiled machine, as it always does. I felt out of place just being on the floor, like greeting people and talking to people and, you know, doing what I was supposed to do. But I rather would have been working, because that's what I'm like used to doing. But I mean, honestly, you guys didn't have to really lean on me for much. There's very few questions that came my way. Everything went pretty smoothly. It was pretty impressive, because there's been very few times where I haven't like been in a situation where I was kind of the person in charge of the organization at the time that an event was going on, where I didn't have people running up to me with 3 million different fires to put out. So it was really nice to, you know, get like three questions, and they were all like timing stuff, like, hey, when do you think we should do like this? It was all like minor stuff, like There wasn't anything major that I had to be like, oh, I gotta put this fire out over there and that fire out over there. It's just it went super smooth, and it set the tone for what we've experienced so far, right? We had the EA conferral at the MDOL thrown in our lap. We rolled right into it.
That was a good time.
We did the cooking for Job's daughter's Easter breakfast.
Let me say, these were all events that I was at.
Right, right. which went extraordinarily smooth as well, because it was like doing a second breakfast with Santa, and it was, you know, same thing, minus the eggs, which made Life even easier. You know, the degree we just conferred went really well. Our stateds have been efficient. The rusty nail, I think, might be my highlight of the year so far,
though. I missed that one.
Yeah, that one you missed.
I designed the pin.
That's probably why it's the highlight of the year, because you weren't there.
Oh, okay.
No, the rusty nail was an amazing event. We had so many people show up for that, more than I honestly expected. And I thought it went off without a hitch. I got to see, you know, Jeff and Jason do awesome ritual work. I had to see our senior deacon, Matt Adrian, do awesome ritual work, especially to be thrown into something he had never done before a month after he became senior deacon. You know, so that was impressive. The whole thing was really cool. I've asked a lot of the lodge and the officer line, and every time they have stepped up and executed and been on point, and I cannot be more proud of them than I am right now. And I would say that seeing everybody step up to the plate, improve, and do good work is probably what I've enjoyed the most this year. I totally, like, nothing I have done is my proudest moment of this year. It's everything that the team has done this year that I am proud of.
And I mean, it goes to show, like, the sheer importance of, like, if you challenge people and give them ownership, it bonds them closer to their role as an officer and their responsibilities. And it's been really cool. One thing I've enjoyed in my officer's journey, because, you know, you start as just a guy and they're like, can you do rod work and clean and do the laundry? And you're like, yeah, I guess. And they're like, all right, nice. Is when you're watching these young officers, and I'm not an old officer, but I've had some time. You know what I mean? As you'll watch these young guys that you remember when they were walking in the door.
Yep.
As a potential candidate, you remember doing their degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Then you remember them being an awkward Mason where they're not really sure what they want to do or where they want to fit in or how to know people.
So you've nailed it 3 for 3 on how I remember you.
And then I was a pretty uppity boy right off the bat, to be honest. I was pretty much in people's faces, but that's my personality. But then you'll watch them like find a place, start learning, start growing, and then you see them 2 years later and you're like, this is almost a different person.
Yep.
And you can start to understand why so many of our installing masters during our installations are brought to tears, because you're just so inspired, being like, I just remember when this, like, you know, how far they've come.
Yep.
And I love watching that from my younger officers as they're growing and learning and becoming confident. And it's really cool to see them start just being like, I'm just trying to learn. And then suddenly them being like, I have ideas, and executing them and taking on harder challenges and pushing themselves and doing all that cool stuff. That is something really special.
It is. And I'm excited that you're getting to experience it and you're recognizing that you're experiencing it, because I don't think I picked up on that as quick as you have. It took me, I think, within the last 12 months to really start picking up on what I was watching.
Well, I mean, technically, you know, right when I was a new Master Mason, I started doing the Perfect Ashler program, even though I'm never going to get a pin for it, even though I mentored like 5 people. So I started mentoring like every new person coming in. I was kind of serving as an unofficial counselor for a couple of years.
Yeah, you were helping out with it.
I was like doing most of them. So a lot of these guys are my mentees. So there is a little bit of this like little mentee baby kind of thing where I'm like, oh, that's my little mentee.
Right.
He's doing so good.
No, and I understand that, you know, but like even without like, I wasn't your mentor, you know, I was around the whole time you were going through it all. But like, I started recognizing the changes, obviously, like, you know, but I never really sat back and went until like within like the last 12 months, like I said, did I look at you and look at Matt Adrian and look at
Rosenlund,
Jafar and Rosenlund and Jesse.
Look at Klima too.
And Klima, mm-hmm. Like, and go, wow, they've really come a long way. And like, you know, it's crazy to think about, because I can remember like when you first joined the lodge and when you first became a Master Mason, and I was just kind of like, Andrew can be a lot to handle sometimes. And not saying you're still not at times, but you know, the way it's developed over time and, you know, the differences that I've seen like are just, it's impressive out of you and other people and out of myself, because I can look at myself in the mirror now and go, this isn't the same Matt I saw 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's amazing. And there's a lot of times where I'll just start smiling when I like think about everybody and how proud of everybody I am. Like, and that's just, it's great. Like I'll just sit in the background and like poke when you guys need to move one direction or the other, like, cause you guys are solid and you're taking the initiative, you're doing the work and you're making my job really, really flipping easy.
You know, this reminds me of after conferring the degree last week, there was a brother who was visiting who came up and he goes, you know, is that picture of you on the wall from the Time for Fellowship podcast, is that really, really old? Because the you that I saw wearing the hat up there looked like a completely different person. And I went, no, it's like 5 months old.
Right.
But like, it is one of those things where I, and maybe I interpreted wrong, that like when you ascend the East to do a degree, it kind of brings out a different part of you too.
Oh, it does.
To try to play that part and to act in that position. I would say that my confidence was bolstered because I'm so much higher up in the air than everyone.
See, that made me more nervous. It was like, whoa,
look at all these people down here.
Yeah. Yeah. The West seems so far away in this lodge room when you actually go and sit in the East.
Miles.
Yeah.
Miles.
Seeing that, you're just like, is that who's sitting over there?
Like, wave at them. It's hard because, like, so I like to, in a lot of the chairs, you can, when something interesting happens, you can do the side eye to, like, another officer being like,
yeah, you don't have that luxury.
In the East, you're looking around, you're like, actually, I can't because they're all watching me.
They're looking at me.
They're going to see me do an eye roll and they're going to be like, wait, what did you just do? And you're like, oh, sorry, I just forgot where I was.
Yeah, it's different. It's different up there. It's good. You know, I got to do the same thing when I was junior warden. I conferred EA degrees and it's good. I think it's good to get that experience being in the East prior to actually being in the East. I think that's very helpful and one of the things I'm really happy I got to the opportunity to do before I made it to the East.
So for our listeners, just to fill you in, there's a tradition at our lodge where, and I know other lodges do some similar types of things where...
No, it's actually the way it's written out in the book.
Yeah, but I mean, I've seen, there's a lot of different ways that, you know, lodges cook and how they get through their years and how they do stuff. So at Lake, we have our senior warden confer the entered apprentice degrees.
You already screwed it up. Junior warden confer the entered apprentice degrees.
Dude,
senior
I screwed this warden, up during the degree too.
Senior warden confers the fellow crafts and worshipful master confers the master mason.
That's the one. I mixed. Dude, I tell you.
And for our out-of-state listeners, I should say that's the way it's prescribed in Wisconsin's way of doing things.
Yep, and there's so much variety in how each state does. I've heard some crazy stuff from other states, but they're just like, there's so much cultural difference in how we all kind of accomplish the same goals. So, but yeah, and it was, I really actually enjoyed it, and I'm really looking forward to my next entered apprentice conferral, which is my understanding that we have some guys in the hopper that, you know, I'm looking forward to doing it again because it's fun.
It is. It is a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to my first Master Mason next month. So that'll be, well, this month now, because this will come out in April. We're on the last day of March. Holy cow.
It'll be like 2 weeks from when this releases.
Yeah. I've been studying. I should probably start studying harder. We got 3 practices. I'll be fine. No, I've been studying quite a bit, actually. So how long have we been running on this, getting back to basics, just chatting here?
57 minutes.
All right. So I think we should just not do events on this one. We did a pretty comprehensive list going all the way out to May on the last episode. So if you didn't catch the last episode and you're looking for some events going on around the state, you can go ahead and catch the last, like, what, 5 to 7 minutes of last week's episode. And we won't keep you much longer. It's been like an hour of us just randomly talking about stuff. Maybe there's been a couple of pearls in there. I hope there has been, but I don't ever expect them to come out of my mouth. So
no, there's been some pearls. I mean, honestly, to our listeners, we just wanted to give you a bit of fellowship, and I will never apologize for some good old-fashioned fellowship.
No, neither will I.
But I do appreciate you guys coming on this journey with us and in just enjoying brothers being brothers, talking about life, talking about masonry. Yep. So thanks for tuning in, and, you know,
always feel free to come visit us and enjoy some fellowship after one of our meetings or degrees. We'd love to have you.
Heck yeah. All right, guys. We'll let you guys go. Take care.
Have a good one.